to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. We hope you are enjoying your Labor Day weekend. As we look to the week ahead, school's getting ready to start. It's already started some places. And yeah.
Isn't that just crazy?
It is.
Like my nieces in Florida, one of them is a teacher.
Oh.
And they started like August 10th.
Yes, they
That's
do.
Crazy.
Yep.
Should be Labor Day through...
But they're out in May.
I know, but it's that's still crazy.
Right. The hot weather. They do it in the hot hot climate.
Right, because it's the worst time of year right now there.
And the best here.
Yes. That's right.
So there's a familiar voice to some people. She's a local author. I know her from working in Providence years ago, years and years. Mm-hmm. She is a social servant, very involved in the community. Anything else that I missed out before we say your name? Mother, grandmother.
Yeah, mother, grandmother, and an old seaside resident. So, yeah. Yes. Yeah, all those things.
But she's not old.
Oh, well.
You said old.
I was going to.
I'd rather you say it than one of us.
I was going to correct that. That I think you mean like multi-generation, not
yes.
old.
Oh, no. No.
Your family line has been here for a while.
No, I'm old and I'm proud of it. And I tell people I'm 80, so I look really good.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
It's Shannon Simons. Thank you for being here tonight with us.
Thanks.
I'm so glad you're here. And we're going to get to all of your wonderful history, what brought you here, what keeps you here, all those fun things in just a minute.
But we also have a returning guest.
We do.
But she doesn't have headphones or a microphone.
Right.
But do we want to at least let her say good evening?
Yeah. And have maybe something about going back to school?
Good evening.
Excellent. Right. She shook her head no, but she was smiling the minute I said we have somebody else here.
This is the last time she can come for a little while because school hasn't started yet.
That's right.
She'll be in bed next week at this time.
Well, we're glad you're both here.
Yes.
So we need to come up with a name for this segment.
Right.
Because this is like totally your segment.
Historic words. Old words that are no longer used or lost words.
That we're bringing back.
We're bringing back.
Alana's mission to bring these words back.
So this word is groke.
Groke.
Groke. Like broke with a G.
Ooh.
Groke.
It should be an expert.
Groke.
And it's okay, so hard to use in a sentence.
I got to guess.
Okay, you're going to guess. I won't even
groke.
Use
it. It is, I have written something, but I did not do my best ability on that writing.
Ooh, that's a good guess.
It's like a throwaway.
Yeah.
Like, it's really disjointed.
Completely wrong.
Not well written. Yeah, I assume it is. That's why I love being totally wrong.
Maybe this will make one of Shannon's books someday. Groke. It's 19th century Scottish. Any guesses?
Oh, my
Scottish.
Ancestors. So I think it's Groot's brother or a gross book.
So it's to stare eagerly at someone who is eating, hoping they'll give you food.
Oh, that's what a dog does.
Well, or children, grandchildren. That's what I was thinking when I said, it's like, oh, this is me. Every time I have my food, this is what my children
do. So would it be my dog looked at me grokely or with a groke look as I ate my dinner?
Here's the sentence they use. Terrence had been known to groke when his doormates would come back with Taco Bell.
Ah.
Oh, I'm a groker. So the doctor took away eggs, milk, and gluten. And so I go to restaurants and I eat lettuce and oil and vinegar and I groke.
There you go. You smell
Excellent.
It all, right?
Right, right.
She's so going to bring that back for you.
Yeah, that's a good one.
She's using it in something. Using it in something.
A writer, yes.
All right. So because this is going to be a good show, we should get right to the history highlights here. And I did something I have not done in years and years and years.
I love it. Because I'm going to remember this.
These are things that happened today instead of tomorrow.
Because Mac didn't know what day it was.
Apparently, I did not.
That's okay.
Apparently, I looked and just saw September 3rd, and I did not think, oh, this is for tomorrow.
Right.
Instead of for today.
So, all right. So, don't use this tomorrow.
Yeah. You're going to be embarrassed if you use it tomorrow. So, it's not an icebreaker. It's not anything you're going to use at work. So, wherever you are right now listening, if your barbecue's still going, maybe.
This is it. Yep.
So, these are things that happened today. 1752. Britain and the British Empire, including the American colonies, adopt the Gregorian calendar, losing 11 days. People riot thinking the government stole 11 days of their work, of their lives. I love that, the part of the rioting.
What happened if you had a birthday in those 11 days?
Apparently you are a year younger now. Yeah. Oh, and I finally got smart. I'm not going to say the date.
Oh, okay.
So I've been promising to do this, and every time I mess it up by saying the year. eBay, Electronic Bay, is founded by Pierre Omidyar. Oh,
founded.
What year is eBay founded?
eBay. Oh, what do you think, Shannon?
1995. Yesterday.
I'll say 1990.
95.
Oh, nice. Wow.
I'm also a psychic. You can find me on the weekend on the prom.
See, I have to think about, like, when did you have an email address for the first time? When did you have check your email?
The 90s, yeah.
And
mid-90s, yeah.
And I was trying to think, like, okay, I think for me it was probably maybe 94, 93, somewhere in that range, maybe 95. And I thought I knew about eBay right away. So
okay.
I would not have, I would have had to really think this through, but you did it like that. So impressive.
Because I remember buying an Atari computer for $3,000, or at least having an argument with my ex-husband about an Atari computer.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, Atari, that dates it too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm dating myself really badly.
All right. On this day in 1777, the Stars and Stripes flies in battle for the first time. Oh. The American flag is flown in battle for the first time during a Revolutionary War skirmish at Cooch's Bridge in Delaware.
Oh, okay.
I like that.
Yeah.
Patriot General William Maxwell ordered the Stars and Stripes banner raised as a detachment of his infantry and cavalry met an advance guard of British and Hessian troops. The rebels were defeated and forced to retreat. But it was the first time, Stars and Stripes. All right. 1919, President Wilson embarks on a tour to promote the League of Nations. And we know how well that started and that worked. 1939, Britain and France declare war on Germany.
Mm-hmm.
1943, the Allies invade the Italian mainland.
Okay.
And then our history highlight today, the thing I think had the most importance, and this is maybe why I did today instead of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because this was
such caught your eye.
It was such a good one.
It,
1783, the Treaty of Paris is signed. The American Revolution officially comes to an end when representatives of the United States, Great Britain, Spain, and France sign the Treaty of Paris. The signing signified America's status as a free nation, as Britain formally recognized the independence of its 13 former American colonies, and the boundaries of the new republic were agreed upon. So that's it. We're done. We're official.
Right.
We're for real.
That is no more conflict anymore.
No, that's right. Everybody respects us, and it's done, and it's finished.
It's also the date that one of my great-great-great-grandfathers, I think, went to prison for being a Tory and lost half of Rhode Island or a big chunk of land.
Did they flee to Canada?
Possibly. No, I don't know. I don't know, but I know they went back to get the land later. I was just reading about it.
And were they able to get it?
Yeah, were they successful?
I don't remember. I haven't gotten that far. So I was pulling apart genealogy for my family.
This is your homework to come back.
Back and tell you. I will tell you. I was telling you. I was reading because they pull, you know, you can pull up like the documents and read it. But you must read longhand. So you have to be.
It's very hard.
You know.
Yes.
It's very tedious.
Another generation. Yeah.
Can you imagine another two or three generations where they, are they even teaching longhand script, as I called it?
They don't, but you know what? The little 8-year-old in the room here taught herself anyways, because there's still tons of books out there, and the kids want to do it.
That's cool.
It's pretty.
That is.
Right? And then once they learn it, because they just sponge it
all
up.
She's going to rule the planet.
There we go.
Because she'll be the only one that can read everything.
She doesn't even know what we're talking about longhand.
But she likes it that we're talking about her.
It'll end up like shorthand.
Yes.
Or, you remember shorthand?
Right. That's true, too. Yeah.
Sure. A code. Yeah. Special code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now they just get to bring their computers everywhere.
Exactly.
Which is fabulous.
It is. Said like a true writer. Glad we have one here in the room. A writer and a reader.
I am. So I've published 8 books so far. I have a 9th one in the works, and I'm embarrassing myself by reading it out loud on YouTube while I edit it. So it's been kind of fun. I write for fun, but I began reading in Seaside on the beach on rainy days. And my grandmother and my great aunts had this bookshelf full of books, and there were all of the Agatha Christies. And I read one, and then I needed the other, and I think I was about 8. Oh. And I just poured. I think I got all the way through that bookshelf at one point.
And do you have a favorite of Agatha Christie?
Oh, I liked And Then There Were None originally. Yes. I think I'm more about A Murder Is Announced now. Because I think it's hilarious that everybody's invited. Yeah. So.
Interesting. I'll have to read that. I've read And Then There Were None. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is the plot for like so many movies and other books and everything.
Which is probably why I moved on.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's great. So, Let's do a little bit of this before we go backwards, because this really was, I love the story of why you started writing, and that I love the big leaps in your career that you've made to pursue that passion and hobby. It's passion and a hobby. Mm-hmm. And it's a, I mean, it's a job too for you. So
definitely.
How did you know that this was part of you?
Well, when I was young, my grandmother and my great aunts were all teachers, and actually we had, my grandfather passed away, and it was really, really tough on me because I was 9, and I always went places with him, and I was very bonded to him. And so I wrote my first emotional poem. Oh.
At 9?
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't really have a funeral. We didn't have funerals. We just kind of had get-togethers, and I wanted people to talk about him, and there wasn't much going on. So I went in the house and wrote a poem. And then, of course, they're so wonderful. I read it, and they told me how great it was. But they would also, like, send back my letters when I'd write to them with little red checks and underline things because they're teachers. Correct them, which I liked. They did. They did, and I liked it. I thought it was super fun. So I loved writing early on. My mother said the first time I got in trouble, I wrote her an apology letter and shoved it under her door.
Oh.
So I began writing like self-help articles for a place called Deseret Digital Media and KSL, and got a contract with my daughter. So I wrote, I think, about 120 on my own, and she wrote another 110 or so for millions of reads. It was super fun. It was very popular, but it was a hobby that kind of took a lot of time, and we got paid very little.
Sure.
And then I left a job. I had worked at the Harbor when it was the Women's Resource Center for 15 years. And I did the thing that I love most. I worked with survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault and loved it. I'm a survivor, and I just met the most amazing people in the direst of circumstances. And they're around you every day just living their normal life. And you have no idea the amazing things that they do to get through and then go on. And it's just part of their history, and it doesn't define them. And I love that about the people that I've worked with. So when I left that job, I still had a passion for the work. And I decided, well, actually, I was like, I'm a prayer. I was praying, like, what do I do? What do I do? How do I work through this? Because it's still in my blood, and I just, it's not the right time. And in talking to my sister, I decided, and in saying a prayer, write a book. And my sister's like, you have to write a book. Write a book. My friend's a very famous author. He'll help you write a book. And then I kind of put it off. And then I had this dream that I was in the ocean and I was being swallowed by a whale. Oh. And I kept screaming, okay, I'll write the book. Oh. And so my sister, who is a teacher, went with me through the process. And I told her, I said, I can't write about what I did because it's all confidential. I can't tell any true story or anybody's real story. But I can write sort of a book that answers questions through fiction. So the first book answered two questions. Why doesn't she just leave, and why doesn't she hit back? And it's a fiction about an advocate that did what I did and two stories of two women. And that was the first book. The next book was Finding Hope, which is kind of an interesting story because the publisher wanted to change it. And they thought that sex trafficking was too hot a topic to talk about. It was too ugly. Nobody would buy it. Nobody wants to hear about it. And at the time, I was volunteering for a group that does recovery work and does, you know, all of the work around sex trafficking, OUR. The Sound of Freedom, the movie, is that group.
Yeah.
So I just published it myself, by golly.
Good for you, yep.
I know. And the interesting thing is the reviews were good, but, you know, it is kind of a sleeper topic, and nobody thought about it. And recently, I got a letter from Amazon, and I've had an opportunity with it to do something unusual. And then I got another call, and I've had like 3,000 downloads in the last few months. Oh, so I don't, yeah, I don't know if that's the movie or not, but whatever money I make, I send a little bit to our, and that was a book about trafficking in a small town. So all my books take place on the coast and in the places that I love, you know, and there's like a tsunami alarm and a tsunami in one, and there's a big storm of 2007 in one and the ocean. And one of the books ends up out on sea and, yeah, so it really, people really love the feel of the Northwest in it and small towns and small town people. And yeah, so, and it's based on what I've really seen happen in our area.
So I do have to, I want to back up, because I think anytime that you or somebody who's been in the position that you're in has the ability in an audience to say it, I think it's worthwhile saying it. So not taking 20 minutes, but back to that first book. Why doesn't she leave and why doesn't she hit back?
Oh, you want to know the answers?
Yeah.
You should read the book. I'm going to tell you the answers. But unless you dive down into somebody's life and walk in their shoes, which is why I wrote the book, you're not going to really get it. So why doesn't she just leave? It's a tangled web of problems when she tries to leave. First of all, who has the money? Who has the power? Who has the control? Who's telling her they're going to court to take the children away, or telling him that I'm going to leave and nobody's going to believe you because you're a man? You know, whichever person is engaged in the problem. Usually you're gaslighted a lot, and your family and your relatives may not support you or may not understand it, and you don't know what's going on behind your back. There was a great story in my life about somebody, a personal story. I had twins, and this is why he's an ex. And we were heading to the in-laws, and I had been at home with them for days and days and days alone. And he said, you know, I'll change all the diapers. I'll take care of everything for you. And you just take a break at your mom's. Well, we weren't there long when they pooped. And I was like, your turn, ha, ha, ha. And then he went in the kitchen and said to my mother, I change all the diapers. So that's gaslighting. That's what it looks like. You know, so good decision. He's gone. I came back to Oregon. So, and why doesn't she fight back? Well, they do. And then they blame themselves. And then they think, you know, it's my fault because I did this, and it's my fault because I did that. But also, occasionally they get arrested and the state steps in and takes their children away. Or, you know, officers do the best they can with what they have. They take their own baggage with them and they take their own training with them. But when you're in the fray and you're in the middle of it, and I'm telling you, no, I've talked to her. She is the victim, or I've talked to him. It's not what you think. They have to go on what the evidence is. And if for years and years he's been torturing her, and then she clocks him with a rock and hurts him, she goes to jail.
Yeah, the evidence is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you spent 15 years at the harbor?
Well, I spent 14 and left and came back for a year, and then I left again.
Do you think the general public is getting a better handle on that it's not as simple as just leave?
What I love is they're talking about
it. Why did she take it? And why didn't she do something about it?
Yeah. Well, what I love is the conversation started. It was a taboo conversation initially. And we came to it, all of us, with lots of baggage. And honestly, when you're in it and you see the women that are there, and men and children, in the darkest of moments, I have seen the most beautiful things happen. And I've also seen, I'm sitting with police and I'm sitting with a family, and he's gone to jail. She's talking to the officer, and the kids pass me and go out and get on the bus and go to school. Wow. So it affects all of us in the community, and we really need to embrace survivors, be patient, be understanding, be supportive, and not bring our baggage to the judgment table. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think I don't want to use the word celebrate, but support that inner strength that it takes to leave, to fight back, to do whatever, to be your own advocate, to reach out for help.
Yeah, be a good listener.
I think that's just, it's an amazing thing. Yeah. Somebody can step out of that when they're trapped.
Well, and I did a little piece of my own. This is not real research, but I kept data for a grant called the Burn Grant, and we kept track of our responses, which were about 140 a year, and about 38 were sexual assault at the time, and about 100 or so were domestic violence. And I was hearing that survivors were repeating. You know, they just go find somebody else and do it again, go find somebody else and do it again. So in our county, I had the lucky pleasure of having, you know, the names of the survivors and the names of the perpetrators on this list for several years. And so I went back to see how many repeated. And the interesting thing was, The victims weren't repeating. It was the perpetrators that were repeating
sure.
with different victims. And so I talked to a couple officers, and they were like, oh, yeah, that could have been two different people. Because they're so tied into the perpetrator, I don't think they always catch on that this is the next girlfriend or the next person, you know? So, yeah. So that was kind of cool. I think someday if we figure it out, 11% is the national statistic for people who go into the next relationship. I bet it's less.
Mm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So let's go back a little bit. Tell us how you ended up here and how your family ended up on the coast.
Okay, this is my favorite story. And someday I want to write it. My cousin Jerome has written a lot of it. My sister wrote a children's book that she self-published. It's so cute. So in the 1920s, right after and during the Spanish flu, my grandmother and my great aunts talked a lot about being inside and watching parades go by and spending days inside. And so what they did is they wrote plays and acted and they did all kinds of things. They're super funny women. It's like the Golden Girls when you're with them. I mean, literally. And so in 1920, their mother really wanted to go west. And they had all finished school, the education to be school teachers. I can't remember what it's called. It was a shorter than it is now. And so they bought a roadster, and they went together, and they crossed the country in that roadster, which was totally unheard of to have, you know, all these women alone. They sewed their own pants. They all got bobs. They got in the car. They took a shotgun. They did their own hunting. And the stories that came out of that trip are hilarious. One of my favorites is they stopped to take a bath, so they're skinny dipping in a lake. And they got their clothes on shore, and a family shows up to have a picnic. And so they've got to get out of the water. And so what they do is they put their clothes over their heads and get out because they didn't care what they saw. They just cared that they didn't know who they were.
Oh.
And that's how they operated, right?
Didn't see my face.
Right. And, you know, these are the kind of women, like when they were 40, two of them summited Mount Hood for fun. And one of them was a chain smoker, so I'm not really sure how she did it.
Oh my gosh.
And when they asked him, do you want to do it again? She's like, no, once is good. Yeah. Okay. But they traveled the world many, many times together. And so I was raised in a house with these women. When they got here in 1920, they bought a house in Seaside out on the Spit. So everything north of the prom, they bought a huge chunk of that land and then gradually sold some of it off. But the house that they bought was down a block or so down. And they had it rolled on logs up to the shore to be on the sand. And it was like the only house there with a windmill down the road. And people thought they were crazy. Why do you want your house up there? It's the wind is bad. The weather's bad. You know, it's a bad spot to be. And they added a basement and added onto it. And that is the house that my family still has in trust. So they were all teachers. And as far back as I've been alive and before, they took all of us to the beach as soon as school was out, and a lot of weekends. And there was a bunk room in the basement. There are 13 cousins. When I was little, there was about nine of us, and then it got bigger. And we spent all summer in that bunk room barefoot. I don't think I ever wore shoes on the beach in Seaside. And they were so fun. I mean, they were just fun. Every day, we'd walk down to the little green store before it burned, buy a newspaper or two, and they would sit. They had rocking chairs that they bought off the docks in Seattle. So they're still there. They're beautiful. I probably shouldn't say that because they're probably valuable. We were just reupholstering them. They would each sit in their rocking chair, and they'd pass the newspaper around, and every single one of them had a different opinion. And I remember, you know, talking about things like God is dead, birth control, the race riots that were occurring at the time, right? Everything was free game. And I would sit and take my piece as it went around because I like to listen. And it was funny because they go and they talk and they talk and they talk, but they never fought. It was never an argument. It was always their opinion. And then in the end, one of them would go, and I know better. And then they just start to laugh. And that was sort of the end of it. So it was this really great environment to be a kid. There was a bookshelf, and when the rain came, I sat at the bookshelf and read every single book in it. And they were Agatha Christie, a lot of Agatha Christie. So that's kind of where I grew my love for mysteries. I think I was 8 or 9 when I, like, finished every book I could get my hands on.
Wow.
So you do need to write a story about them.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Awesome?
Just a little bit you've said. Yeah. How did they choose Seaside in Oregon? How did they?
Mama is my great grandmother. Her mother was Scottish, and they were part of the Pringle line that came over from Scotland not long before their little family was. And Mama always wanted to be out west. They were at Lake Superior for a while, and she cooked in the hotel so that the girls could go to school. Hard work. And her husband, Charles Pringle, died when my grandmother was 4. So she was a widow with 5 girls. Yeah. And so when they finished school, they wanted to give her what she wanted. Margaret, the oldest, her husband actually passed away while they were traveling. And then Mama went got back and got her and brought her with them. But they took her. And as soon as they got to the house in Seaside, they told her. Well, first they were in Clasconi for a little while, and then Seaside. They told her she would never, ever, ever be able to do another chore for the rest of her life. No. If she wanted to cook, that's fine. But everything else was up to them. And it was that way. They just loved her that much. And there was a man called Papa John in Seaside. You'd call Papa John for repairs. We're still unrepairing some of those repairs. Oh. But he was a character. So that's how they came. She wanted to. They went past... like on the Columbia where the Celilo Falls, mm-hmm. where they have some photos of the tribe fishing on the river.
So you not only have stories, oral histories that have been given to you, but you have photographic evidence of this trip.
I have a diary from it. Super fun.
We need to get that
super fun
here.
Yeah. Well, I would really love it.
We know people, Shannon. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that we love really that to. Love of the ocean and a family, that certainly just seems... to live in you. So tell us about that and why you choose to stay.
Well, I was so bonded to my cousins, like so bonded. And when I was 11, my dad got a job out of state and we were transferred. And I can remember being in the back of the station wagon, throwing up and crying the whole way out. And we got to some place. My mom was, isn't it beautiful? I'm like, it's a desert. So the first chance that I got, I brought my kids and we came back to start a new family. I had a second marriage and I knew when I was 12, I wrote in my diary, I will buy a house a block off the beach in Seaside, Oregon. And so I bought a house a block off the beach, about 4 blocks from the beach house. And it was the perfect place to raise my family, all 6 kids.
Oh, I love it.
So, yeah.
And so who's here now? 6 kids?
4 of them. I don't know if they want me to
own them. But plus grandkids. And
I have 15 grandkids. 4 are out of state. And 6 are out of state. And my daughter and my son are out of state. The rest are here.
Oh, I love
that. Super fun.
And do they, the ones that are out of state, was that just circumstances? Or were they, I've had enough of the beach?
Oh, circumstances for one and for the other, love. They were going to college in another state, and her husband, well, they were in the Army, went to this college, and then he got this fabulous job, and they've stayed. And so they're actually flying me to them this weekend, and we're going to a resort to sit in mineral pools, so it'd be great.
So how would somebody find any of your books, and how do they buy them to make sure you get the most?
And she writes cozy mysteries, too.
Yeah.
Like Agatha Christie. Yeah, fun ones.
And they're all, like, age appropriate for 11 above. Like all of my books are, you can hand them to your teenager, you can hand them to your kids. Yeah. So they're on Amazon. You just go to Shannon Simons, Symonds. But the best place to buy them is at Beach Books. And I just got an invite to bring some up. I'm going to share them with Lucy's books. So you can order them too on the online small business bookstore, which I really, really love. I'd go to Beach Books. I'd go to, our local stores and give them the business.
And Audible as well.
Beach Books Audible. And Lucy's, mm-hmm. 2 best bookstores
Thank
in the world.
Thank you, Shannon. Keep writing. Keep sharing those stories. We appreciate you being here.
Well, super fun. Thank you.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
All right.